Some of my greatest memories of my mom's garden are the homegrown flower bouquets that she would gift everyone who came to visit with. She would just walk outside, snip whatever was in bloom in her glorious garden, bunch it with a bunch of herbs from her kitchen garden, wrap it in a wet paper towel and tinfoil, and gift it. Her bouquets and their rustic tinfoil dressing were famous as hostess gifts, and I just thought it was the simplest, kindest way to grow joy for herself and for her friends. That's the beauty of growing cut flowers. It not only rewards you with joyful blooms to enjoy in your home throughout the season, but it allows you to spread joy and kindness through gifts of your blooming bounty. If you are like me and you have dreamt of a cut flower garden, but maybe have been a little bit scared to take your first step, today's episode is tailor-made for you. Welcome. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Hello, plant friends. Welcome to Growing Joy with Plants. If you're new here, my name's Maria. I'm your new best plant friend, and I'm here to help you care for plants successfully and grow joy while doing so. If you're a repeat guest, welcome back. It's such an honor to be here with you and help you grow joy in your indoor and outdoor gardens. If you guys have been enjoying this podcast or if you listen to this episode and you like it, please do me a favor and share it with a friend. The word of mouth through listeners is really the way the podcast grows, and I want as many people as possible to hear this free, amazing, helpful content to help you grow plants successfully, but more importantly, grow joy in your lives alongside your houseplants. So please share the love. Speaking of love, I fell in love with today's guest, Lisa Ziegler, after devouring her book. I read her entire book, The Cut Flower Handbook, in one sitting. I was planning my cut flower garden, and I just couldn't believe how helpful her book was. I'm a visual learner. There were so many visuals, and I literally read the entire book in one sitting. It was so helpful. Then I got lucky enough to interview her for this podcast on how to grow cut flowers for beginners in small space, right? Because a lot of times, if you're learning how to grow cut flowers, you're probably doing it in a smaller plot. Lisa even recommends that you start small and then expand. And then I got to tell you, I fell even more in love with Lisa throughout this interview. She really is the real deal when it comes to learning to cut flowers. She's done it both as a hobbyist and as a means of income for her family and is crazy successful now. So today's podcast interview is a high-level overview of what you need to know if you want to delve into cut flower gardening. And stay tuned to the end because the interview is about, you know, the basics of cut flower gardening. But at the end, Lisa actually coaches me through my plans to grow in grow bags this year, because I'm still growing on my balcony. I have a rental. I don't have ground to plant into yet. So I'm going to do grow bag cut flowers. And we have a great talk about that as well, if that interests you. So this is an amazing interview. I wish I could have talked to her for another hour about cut flowers. She's so amazing. So without further ado, let's dive in. Lisa, welcome to Growing Joy with Plants. I am so excited to pick your brain, very selfishly, but also for the audience, about cut flower gardening. So excited to have you here today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I know so many of us in the audience dream of having that cut flower garden that you can just go outside, snip a few blooms to have in a vase on your desk, or maybe to bring as a housewarming gift or, you know, a hostess gift. To me, that is just like the pinnacle of being a gardener, is being able to share your blooms and your joys with others. That's why I grow flowers. So I'm wondering, why do you grow flowers? And can you share a little bit of your journey to becoming the incredible educator that you are today in the cut flower garden realm?
Sure. So thanks for asking. And, you know, I thought about this a little earlier because, you know, you shot me that question and said I'll be asking. And in fact, my very beginning, I married a big vegetable gardener. And so I came into it that way. But my grandma was really sick and for a long period of time was paralyzed. And so I would go visit her once a week, and she loved flowers. So I ventured into flowers. I planted a little row of zinnias. And what happened next just changed the course of my life. Because first off, that little 10-foot row, every time I'd cut it, I think, oh my gosh, what am I going to do next week? when I have to go to see her, and they'd be back. I would cut and they would come again. And that just really launched me onto this path of grow and cut flowers. Literally, that was the very, very beginning.
I think we share zinnia as one of our favorite cut flowers. My podcast used to be called Bloom and Grow Radio. Now it's called Growing Joy with Plants. I did this whole rebrand. The entire rebrand of my show was based off of one of the first zinnias that I grew. It's this fuchsia zinnia with bright yellow center. I don't remember which mix it was. It was in one of the mixes, but I took a photo of this zinnia and I sent it to my designer and I was like, this is the color palette for my rebrand. Like, this flower has brought me so much joy just popping out on my balcony garden. And they're a great starter flower, right?
But they're more than a great starter flower. Let me tell you, after 27 years of being a very successful flower farmer, zinnias are in our top 10 cash crops. They're in our top 10 seed that we sell. You know, we have an online garden shop. And it's like, why do we need to go past zinnias? I mean, we grow a lot of other stuff, but zinnias are spectacular. And they're everybody looks at them and says, oh man, my granny grew those. Or, you know what I mean? We romanticize them and love them. So you're not alone. And we grow a lot of zinnias around here.
Well, and they come in so many different colors now. It's not just the like pink and yellow. There's, you know, and the double blossoms with the different colors and the ombre. And I tried dahlias one year. And for me in zone 6, dahlias were a little too high maintenance to start them and then grow them and then have to put the tubers out, just for me in this season of life. But zinnias, it's like the same aesthetic as a lot of the dahlias, but they're just so much easier.
Yeah. And, you know, dahlias are higher maintenance. We don't grow dahlias anymore either for that very reason. Zinnias come in every color. I mean, we have lime green and wine. And I talk about often that the one that we always grow, we typically only grow primarily one variety of zinnia that comes in, I think it's 12 or 13 colors. And that's Benares Giants. They're the biggest, most double, and most disease resistant, and the one that most commercial growers grow. And that's what you want to grow because they just outperform all the others.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you mentioned you started growing flowers for your granny as a hobby. You know, your husband had a home vegetable garden. You started growing for your grandma. How did the flower garden for you evolve? And when did you take it from hobby making bouquets for my grandma to actually, I'm going to grow thousands of flowers a week at a commercial scale in my backyard?
Well, it did evolve over about probably 3 to 5 years. During that time of seeing my grandma, believe it or not, I picked up a magazine in the waiting room and there was an article about how you could grow and sell cut flowers. And I thought, that's interesting. And because I loved my job, but I was newly married, I didn't have to work anymore. I enjoyed my career. But I thought, oh, wow. And when I mentioned it to Stevie, he was like, go for it. You know, we live in his grandparents' homestead and they were huge gardeners. I mean, this place was composted for 80 years before I got here. So it was kind of like a natural evolution. And so I launched my flower farm later that year, started small, followed the instructions of like starting really small, which, by the way, is the way we stayed because we learned, why would you want an acre garden when you can produce those same amount of flowers on half an acre or less, or in a 3x10 cutting garden, which is the size I recommend everybody starts with? And so my flower farm just kind of evolved. And I mean, the first year out of the gate, the demand for our flowers was so great. My biggest challenge was growing enough. And that was a wonderful thing to experience. And, just fell head over heels in the whole process. I was already a business person, so I was barely a gardener when I started, you know? So I had to master figuring out how to grow, and that led to discovering cool season hardy annuals and the three season garden. And it's like, I just was so blessed to be introduced to the key success pieces so early in my career.
Yeah, you mentioned I want to say thank you because I read your book in one sitting. I like devoured your book. I could not stop reading it. I was like, yes, more. Oh my God, I needed to know that. I needed to know that. I needed to know that as I'm embarking on, you know, growing cut flowers a little more seriously than I have before. And I'm a visual learner, and you have that model of, you know, you have two, are they 2x8 beds?
No, two beds, they can be any size, but typically they're like 3x10 or 3x16, depending on your level of need of flowers.
Yeah. So you have these two beds that you can kind of replicate and you show us, this is what you do in the spring. This is what you do in the summer. This is what you do in the fall. And I was just like, thank you.
It's hard, isn't it, to wrap your head around that. This is, I mean, the one thing just to keep in mind, this is a cutting garden. This is not a landscape bed. So you just put aside everything you've ever thought and done in the past. You're starting anew.
So when you say you can grow more in your small plot than an acre, that's because you're intensive planting, you're planting your flowers much closer together, or it's that you're respecting spacing guidelines, but you're cutting more, and so you're getting more blooms.
Well, the spacing guidelines for a cutting garden are 100% not anything like a landscape garden. You plant plants incredibly close together because if you think about it, you are doing a hard pruning twice a week. You're constantly cutting those flowers. So when you plant according to what I recommend in the book and in everything that we do, I mean, it's on our seed packets, it's everywhere, because everything is about cutting gardens. You don't space them out further. And when you plant tight and when you cut as recommended, and then you actually embrace three-season cutting gardens, meaning when the cool season starts pooping out, you already have something ready to roll right into that place. So you have no qualms about removing that and replanting it immediately. And that's also true in vegetable gardening. You know, we're our own worst enemies, right? We want a constant supply, but we don't want to do what it needs. And so, yeah, by treating it like a true cutting garden, we cut more from our small gardens compared to what people think. I mean, we produce 10 to 15,000 stems a week when we were in high production, and that's on an acre and a half garden. But what you have to remember is only a third of that is being harvested at one time. A third is in harvest, a third is just being planted, and a third is coming along. So we cut it is still even fascinating to me how many flowers. Funny enough, this morning I was cutting, we have a demo garden that's 3x16 here, and it's in cool season hardy annuals, and I planted it so I can do some photography. And I thought to myself this morning after I cut it, good grief, you'd have to give away two bouquets a week to keep up with, you know, keep one, give two away to actually be able to keep cutting it. And yeah, so smaller is the secret to success in a home garden and a flower farm.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And it's a relief for me as I grow in grow bags or containers on my balcony. I'm in the middle of the woods. We have so much deer and animal pressure. I'm like in the woods. So there's more deer than people on my land. You know, so I have very limited real estate. And it's so exciting to know that I can grow in a couple of grow bags enough for a few bouquets. And if you're a hobby gardener, you don't need more than a couple of bouquets, you know, every couple of weeks. But in your book, it was very interesting. So you talk about the difference between like a cutting garden and flowers in a landscape garden. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you, particularly the location.
Sure. So, I mean, I am all about setting yourself up to be success from the get-go, right? And the location of the bed is super important for that. And so there's just so many different aspects to that. For one, if the hardest challenge for cut flower fanciers to embrace is that you have to cut this garden twice a week or it's going to shut down, it's going to stop growing. And that's the hardest step. People are like, oh my gosh, those zinnias are so gorgeous. When I stand at my kitchen sink washing dishes, I just stare at them. So the solution is you put your cutting garden where you can't stand at your kitchen sink and enjoy it. You put it behind the garage or down the side of your house where nothing else will really go because you don't want to landscape there because guess what? Nobody can see it. That's the perfect spot, right? Because that keeps us from actually cutting it. And then to actually put a cutting garden in the midst of your landscape, let's say, it makes it really hard to set it up like a cutting garden, you know, to be able to access it from all the sides so you can reach in to cut and not have to stand on the bed, to actually do the cutting, to put in flower support netting, which is key to success. I mean, one downpour of rain just lays your blooms right down. So, yeah, location, 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 put it out of sight. I like to think, where is the water source? Even though everything that I grow, I do not grow fussy flowers. I'm the complete opposite of what people think. You need to basically survive on your own around here, or we just kind of mow you down and go on to something else. And because that's the reality. Think about cutting 10,000 stems of flowers a week. Think of bunching, selling, delivering. I mean, I had help, obviously, but there's never enough people and hands to go around. And it's no different for the home gardener. You know, you want to walk out to a garden that is set up, that is low maintenance. I mean, literally, after we set our gardens up, we rarely go back to them until we start cutting flowers. You know, there is no weeding involved because we set them up to out-compete the weeds. And so, yeah, location, a standalone designated cutting garden, small, 3x10 is the biggest I would recommend to anybody. Half of that if you don't have a lot of sources, because what else happens is if you have too many flowers in that little garden, you cut it. And your flowers are still beautiful. It's been 6 days. You go out and it's like, oh my gosh, look at all these flowers. But my flowers inside are still beautiful. Most people think, I'll cut them later. I'll just leave them. That's the beginning of the end of a cutting garden. Cutting them actually tells the plants, send up more blooms because we need some more flowers up here. The flowers lasting longer because they come from your garden where they've never been out of water. You're going to condition them properly, meaning you're going to give them a little help so they last longer in clean, bacteria-free water. The fact that they last longer actually is the demise of most cutting gardens. So, you know, what I often tell people, by about July, if you don't regularly share bouquets, because a little 3x10 will give you a big bunch of flowers every week. If you don't start sharing your flowers, by mid-July, your home will take on the look of a funeral parlor. I mean, there'll be flowers everywhere. And that becomes a burden to some people. It's like, what do I do with them? Or I'm not going to cut them. And then they skip cutting and then they stop producing. And it's a vicious cycle.
I just added the most gorgeous self-watering planters to my balcony garden. And I must tell you all about them, plant friends. The Crescent Garden True Drop self-watering planters let me grow happy, healthy veggies and flowers, even with the busy summer travel schedule I have. We all know tomatoes and tender herbs can be divas in the summer heat, and there's nothing worse than coming home from a long weekend to withered plants or even dead plants or dropped blooms. These Crescent Garden planters solve that problem by extending the time between watering with the True Drop self-watering technology and elevate my garden's aesthetic. I'm literally on a 10-day vacation right now, and I have no stress because I know that the Crescent Garden planters are watering my plants while I'm gone. If you haven't seen them, check out my Instagram or YouTube for visuals. The chic terracotta color of the planters is a major upgrade from my old black grow bags. But if terracotta isn't your jam, they have tons of color options. The Crescent Garden Nest model is the self-watering raised bed that I have with a trellis. It's perfect for my micro dwarf cucumbers and tomatoes to grow up. The rim model looks just like a normal terracotta pot, but it has the True Drop self-watering technology. Crescent Garden offers various shapes, sizes, and price points, all made from 100% recyclable materials with a 10-year limited warranty. Don't just take it from me, plant friends. Go on their website and check it out. And as a Growing Joy listener, you're going to get 15% off for a limited time. So visit growingjoywithmaria.com/crescentgarden and use the code GROWJOY1515 at checkout for 15% off. Act fast. This offer ends soon. That's growingjoywithmaria.com/crescentgarden and use code GROWJOY15 at checkout. So today we're talking about the importance of setting your flowers up for success with good soil. Lisa in the interview even says it's where she spends her time and money, making sure that the soil is good so that her flowers thrive. So if you need high quality potting mix, garden soil, compost, or fertilizer, go use Espoma Organics, the 90-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. We know I love Espoma. My whole garden is planted up in Espoma, and they have everything you need to grow flowers successfully. So you can start your seeds in their seed starter mix. Then you can plant the seedlings up into your garden with their Biotone Starter Plus plant food. It helps your plants grow larger root masses to help them establish fast. It reduces transplant loss. And then you can use their array of garden soils, potting mixes, and compost for whatever container or in-ground bed that you're gardening in. And then you can feed the plants with their line of fertilizers called Tones. So Lisa says that she uses a general fertilizer that would be their Garden Tone, Or you could even use Espoma's Flower Tone, which is a fertilizer specifically for growing flowers. To top it all off, Espoma has an incredible sustainability commitment with 100% solar-powered plant, zero-waste manufacturing, and eco-friendly packaging. To learn more about their indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link below to go to my Espoma Amazon storefront for a list of all of my favorites. Okay, I have so many thoughts. Number one, with the spacing, just to go circle back. So my mom is an incredible gardener. She had an edible landscape. So she hid her tomato plants in her front yard within her bushes. She was incredible. And every person who would come by, she would snip a few flowers and then all sorts of herbs and use the herbs as her greenery. And she would make these bundles, wrap the bottom in tinfoil and a wet paper towel and just send people on their way. And, you know, people who were taking a walk in the neighborhood.
Right.
Like,
just awesome.
Whoever. Like, you want some flowers? But it's so nice. There are so many ways that you can share your flowers. But it's interesting with the spacing for a kitchen garden and a cut flower garden sounds very similarly, that you are kind of ignoring the general planting guidelines because you're harvesting so much. Like, I plant my lettuce and my herbs embarrassingly close because we harvest every day from them. So that totally connects with me for the cutting garden. Before we dive into specifics on how to grow these plants, I have to know, well, number one, what's your zone? What gardening zone are you in?
I just went from 7B to 8A.
Okay. Oh, you lucky ducks. You have a longer growing season now.
People were up in arms, weren't they, when the new map came out? But it's like, oh my gosh, for those of us that grow cool season hardy annuals, it means we get to even plant more in the fall. You know, I mean, this is like a bonus.
Yeah, totally. So I'm in 6A. So people, as we go into this conversation, they can get the visual of what they might be wanting to grow. You have so much experience. You mentioned you're only growing the easiest cut flowers to grow. What are your top picks for beginners of these flowers that if we've got limited space, we can't mess around with trying every variety. We just want to do it right the first time, have some wins. What would be flowers you would recommend us growing?
Sure. Of course, we're going into the season now where we're talking warm season, tender annuals. You know, it's too late for cool, even for those of you up north to actually plant them. So my go-to are pretty dadgum simple, and they are sunflowers, zinnias, and lemon basil. And my recommendation is we only grow single stem sunflowers as cut flower growers for a lot of reasons. And the series that I tend to stick with, or the family of sunflowers, is called Pro Cuts. They are quick from seed to bloom, like 55 to 60 days, and there's 14 colors. So you can have a really, I mean, if you want beyond the classic dark center orange petals, which is when we were in high production, just to give you a tip of how many people want sunflowers. We planted 1,200 sunflower seeds a week. We start them indoors.
Wow.
A week for 30 weeks every single year. It bought 1 year sunflowers, bought a $35,000 John Deere tractor. I mean, they are so undervalued, but they are the pinnacle of cut flowers. People love sunflowers. And because we grow them to be about 3 to 4 inches in bloom size, and people don't know this, but when you grow single stem sunflowers, you 100% control the size of the bloom by the spacing in the garden. The sunflowers that I grow, we grow them about 6 inches apart in all directions. That gives us the perfect bouquet bloom. That same sunflower can be planted 12 inches apart in all directions, and it'll give you a big old 4-H whopper. So sunflowers for sure. And the fact that there's a mix, often recommend to people to grow the Pro Cut mix because that way you meet all the colors, right? And then zinnias, the same thing, Benary's Giant mix, because that way you get a little bit of variety. And then lemon basil after all these years, the same.
I was surprised to see that in your book, the lemon basil.
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you, we sold the same flowers to the same customers for 27 years. I mean, retail and commercially. They never got tired of Miss Burns lemon basil. They didn't even care if it was a little wilted, if it got harvested too late in the morning. They're like, I don't care. It smells like lemon. Who doesn't want that on their kitchen table? And it's beautiful. It's light green. It has chartreuse green foliage. And we cut the heck out of it. So those three, sunflowers mix, Benary's Giant zinnias, and that Miss Burns lemon can make bouquets very, very much from week to week. But I'm telling you, people never get tired of looking at them. Never get tired.
So with the lemon basil, because I have a kitchen garden that I've grown for years. Are you growing the lemon basil and just letting it bolt as quickly as possible so you're getting the flowers, or you're growing it for the leaves?
Well, no, we harvest it at the proper stage to harvest, which means proper stage to harvest not only means it contributes the most to your bouquet, but it also lasts the longest in the vase. And so for us, we're using it for filler too, to puff up our bouquets. And you strip it so much harder than what you would ever dream, but that makes it last longer in the vase. So we actually like to begin harvesting it just as the shoot of the flower starts to elongate. And you can harvest it a little bit past that. But the thing is, if you plant too much lemon basil and you don't cut it all, it will get woody in no time, as you know, as an herb grower. I mean, it'll just get woody and bolt and just not be good for anything. So, you know, like in a 3x10 garden, you only need like 5 lemon basil plants.
It's so funny. I was at the nursery this weekend buying all my plants for this garden install for myself that I'm doing. And I was buying for stuff for my kitchen garden, and they had all sorts of basil. And I saw the lemon basil and I was like, what is this? And I actually didn't buy it because I was like, I don't need lemon basil to eat. I just want normal Genovese basil. But now I'm like, I got to go back to the store and go get that lemon basil for my cut garden.
Well, but here's the thing, Marie.
Okay, tell me.
9 out of 10 times, any of the varieties that you can buy down at a nursery are not cutting varieties, meaning they either don't get tall enough or they don't have characteristics like they might drop pollen everywhere. Miss Burns Lemon is the only variety of lemon basil that we grow because she gets 30 inches tall. And also, one of the reasons that she lasts so long in a vase is her foliage is less smaller. Think about having that stem having to support all that foliage from water in a vase, right? And so we are very quick to let people know that 9 out of 10 times, anything you can buy at a nursery, people want it short. They don't want it to fall over. So it's the complete opposite. And so that's why, you know, we're huge seed starters, which is a super simple way to start. And that's why, because when you start your own seeds, you have control over what varieties you actually get to grow.
And is there more of a filler flower that you like to grow with the zinnia, sunflower, and in addition to the lemon basil for someone who might not be able to find the particular lemon basil at their?
Sure. I mean, well, anything can be a filler, right? I mean, we grow lots of other flowers. I mean, yarrows and coxcomb and celosias. But again, pretty much I would be fairly certain and saying a real key piece of being successful as a cut flower gardener is jumping in and starting from seed. And that's probably one of the things that I've taught more than anything else. And it's because people make it so complicated. There are just a few basic rules. And guess what? When you follow them, you become an overnight superstar. And that means you have thousands of varieties, not to mention the economics of not purchasing plants if you don't have to. I purchased plants this past weekend for all my containers. You know what I mean? There is a place for everything, but for a cutting garden, it is definitely a simpler deal to just start from seed.
So even for people in shorter growing seasons like me, you're going to recommend starting from seed indoors and then transplanting? Or are you saying I should start my sunflower seeds outdoors in the garden?
Sure. So it varies. You have a great point. People that live in shorter growing seasons have huge benefits for starting seeds indoors. So when your last frost date comes or whatever it is, whatever season you're planting in, when it's time for you to plant, you have a ready to go in the ground, healthy transplant that's going to hit the ground running. So to plant seeds, let's just talk about warm season so we can clarify this a little bit. The time to plant a warm season transplant outdoors is earlier than to plant seeds outdoors. Seeds need heat to pop and germinate. And so I am fairly confident in planting a transplant just almost right after my last expected frost date, because I can throw a row cover over it if we're going to have a cool night or something like that, right? If I would have put seeds in the ground at the same time, that soil is so much cooler. It needs some time to warm up if you want to have strong, healthy germination. That's why so many people fail. Most commercial growers rarely, if ever, direct sow anything out in the garden. And it's because you have no control over the environment. You have to wait so much longer. You have to spend so much more on the seed. You have to sow so many more seeds that then you have to pay somebody or do yourself thinning them, because you have to oversow to get a good stand of plants to make the most out of your space. It's really a big old vicious cycle. But starting indoors, you know, that was my big challenge. When I started flower farming, I would have actually started flower farming almost a whole year earlier had I been an okay seed starter. I struggled. I bought every kit on at the nursery. Of course, we didn't even have the internet back then, y'all. That's how old I am. But I bought every of those dome kits and trays and all that stuff, and I had little to no success. And then I just happened, when I discovered about soil blocking, which is the way we start seeds, it is just so much more space savvy and easier to be successful because the environment is so much more conducive to a healthy start to your seeds. And I mean, that's literally what really launched my career, particularly as a speaker and a teacher, is teaching the simple basics of seed starting. And I mean, it's the opposite. People think it's more complicated to start inside. What they see, I can tell you exactly what they see, are dollar bills. They see a grow light and they see a heat map. But let me just tell you something. I spent $100 on two trays of plants this past weekend for my containers. And that was not very many plants. You can get a grow light and a heat mat almost for that. And that's going to start your seeds for the rest of your life. And those are two key pieces that people resist. And it's what holds them back.
Yeah, it's funny. I bought a grow light a couple years ago to start some seeds. I couldn't start seeds indoors this year because I had too much travel in the spring. But I did a couple of years ago. I think it was $70. And the funny part is I've used the germination mat and the grow light for so many other things besides seed starting. Like when my houseplants have been in, when my houseplants are have a fungal infection or have something and need like a little houseplant hospital, I get the little seed starting light out and I pop them under it. It ends up being very helpful.
Well, you know what time it is, plant friends. It is time for my midday Equilibria Greens juice break, and I am so freaking excited about it. You've probably heard me talking about it, but the Equilibria Daily NutriGreens is a powder you mix into water or a smoothie or whatever you want, and it contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and vegetables. 35 fruits and vegetables. You can never eat that many fruits and vegetables in a day. The Daily NutriGreens supports digestion, boosts the immune system, boosts mood and energy levels, and helps detoxify the body. But frankly, I'm just thankful it tastes so good. I mean, I'm thankful for the nutrition, but this greens juice tastes so delicious, and I look forward to it as a midday pick-me-up every day. It kind of tastes like apple juice to me. It's sweet. It's on the sweeter side, but it's smooth. It's not chalky like some other greens powders. And it also doesn't have that weird aftertaste a lot of greens powders have. I've been using greens powders to supplement my nutrition for like 8 years now on and off, so I've tried a lot of brands. Normally, I just do a scoop of the greens powder in my ice water, but lately, I've been also making smoothies for lunch with it because it's hot and I don't want to use anything hot for my lunch, and I'm really busy and I don't have time to make lunch. So I whip up a smoothie. I've been blending one scoop of the greens powder in yogurt, a little protein powder, water, and whatever else is in my fridge. And it's so delicious. I'm literally drinking a smoothie with Equilibria Greens right now. If you've been thinking about adding a greens powder to your life, either to fill the gap in your daily nutrition or just add a little kick to your water intake, head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off of Equilibria's daily NutriGreens and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who
travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. I want to go back to something that we skipped over because I'm too excited chatting with you about plants. For those listening who don't understand the difference between annuals and perennials, you focus on annuals. Why? And what's the difference?
Sure. So an annual is typically a plant that lives 1 year. It starts from seed, it grows up, it does its job of blooming or bearing fruit or tomatoes or whatever, and then it dies. There are two different types of annuals, warm season and cool. They have the same life cycle, but they have very different planting times. And so as a small space gardener and or farmer, when you grow annuals, you get longer bloom periods because the minute the bloom is up on the cool season that are out there in my farm right now that have been blooming for weeks, as soon as they're done, we pull them out and plant warm season immediately. If those were perennials planted there, guess what? You just spend the rest of the year weeding them and feeding them and every 2 or 3 years digging them up and dividing them to keep them vibrant and alive, which is what most people don't do. So their perennials just kind of die out over several years because we didn't realize. So space and volume and maintenance is a big part of it. But you want to know what really drives me to stick with annuals is because we constantly are seed starting and constantly are planting here from about January to November. We're seed starting and then planting. I constantly get to add new flowers. Think about how many seeds or flowers or vegetables you see after you've. So most people do, like you mentioned earlier, in the spring you were traveling. Well, we start starting seeds back in January and February and do it every week up until November. And that's not just because I'm in 8A. That is for anybody, pretty much anywhere, right? So that means that if you come across a flower or a tomato that you didn't start earlier, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm putting that in the next round of seeds that I'm starting. It constantly changes our garden. It constantly allows me to rip something out and say, whose idea was it to grow that flower in red? It's horrible looking. Or it's pesty. I mean, we don't grow pest magnets around here. That's what allows us to use zero chemicals, even organic, is by not growing those magnet plants that just really seem to attract.
What are the magnet plants? I have to ask you.
They're different for everybody. They're different for everybody. For me, the number one enemy besides deer for a flower grower are thrips. Thrips are an insect, and thrips carry the viruses that take tomato plants out there. They're little boogers. And there are some plants that just harbor thrips. And for me in the South, those were gladiolas and Shasta daisies. You could not pay me to have those two plants on my property. So once I realized what the problem that I had thrips, and then I attempted to address them through what's called integrated pest management, which means this was years ago, targeted pest controls. I mean, not only did I not have time to go through all the steps required to do all of that, the product was incredibly expensive and I just couldn't get rid of them. And then I learned, you know what? This picture is bigger than the flowers that have the bugs. Why are these bugs here? Why are they coming back over and over again? And that was a big step for mankind for me about learning. It's a lot about your environment. It's not specific flowers or plants that you're growing that allow you to be. I don't see how people survive organic growing without focusing on preventing the problems.
Yeah. No, totally. I love that.
So back to perennials. I'm sorry. So perennials, that's right. So I've explained what annuals were. Perennials are plants that typically live from year to year to year, right? So that's the big difference. And people see that as a an easy way out, but it is a it is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Especially, and I think if you want more landscape plants, yes, grow the peonies, grow those perennials. But if you're growing specifically for a cutting garden, it does sound like annuals are the way to go because of that succession planting and crop rotation.
Yeah. And also, I mean, if you become a flower farmer, there are definitely places for perennials, bulbs, and woodies, which are shrubs. You know, there's all cutting varieties. But for the home gardener, a freestanding designated small annual cutting garden is the perfect companion to your landscape. If you're on the flower guild at church where you're doing flowers every week, yeah, maybe you can add some perennials in just to break it up and have some special in and out. And the other problem with perennials is they typically only bloom for a short period of time, once a year. And so there's just a lot of reason. It is the whole perennials seem to be an easy fix is why people choose them. They don't even think about when are the blooms coming, what's the availability, and how do I take care of them?
It sounds to me like perennials are almost like a 2.0 level for the home gardener.
Exactly.
Start with annuals, really learn how to care for them, how to prune them, how to do all of those things. And then once you really have your bearings, then you can start. Because also with perennials, it's a larger investment. And once you put them in the ground, if you plant them incorrectly or if you put them in the wrong, you know, light or whatever, it's just going to be a headache. So back to annuals. What are your top tips for people who want to get started, for whether you're from seed or whether you're like me and you had to go to the store and buy plants because life got in the way? What are your tips for success for a first, you know, for a win in the cutting garden the first year out?
Sure. Spend more time setting up your garden to be low maintenance than about the flowers that you're planting. I find it to be completely the opposite. People tend to think that we spend so much time here actually weeding and keeping. My farm is pretty pristine. Again, because I'm in the middle of the city, I have to keep it pristine. You know, I'm the last standing commercial farmer. And that doesn't mean that everybody appreciates and likes what's going on over here. So I make a real effort to keep our place tidy. And so the first thing I think of when we're getting ready to prepare, we just completed our first warm season succession. They're all out there planted. Now we're starting more seeds and a whole time cutting cool season, right? So now I'm tackling a new garden. The first thing I think of is, all right, how are we going to build this garden? How are the pathways going to be maintained? How am I going to keep the weeds out of the bed? How am I going to keep the weeds from sprouting up around my plants? So the bottom line for us is covering the soil, because we are typically planting transplants. That means that we want to cover the soil, whether that is any organic mulch. We use a biodegradable mulch film that looks like plastic, but it's a corn byproduct. And what that does very effectively is we put it down. You can put mulch on top of it for aesthetics if you want, but it blocks the light from getting to the soil, which is what sprouts 95% of all of the weed seeds that are just laying wait out there. So we're all about squashing the weeds. How are we going to water this bed? How are we going to reach in to cut it? And so really it's the setup. So plan your weed prevention. Most garden soils are really pretty compact. We like to add 2 to 4 inches of compost, finished compost or leaf mold, and we purchase it. We can't possibly make enough compost to feed our farm. Most real gardeners can't make enough.
You add the compost to the top or you add it in to your...
So it depends on what your little plan is. So if you have a fairly in-shape garden bed, you could put a couple inches of compost on the surface of your bed and use it kind of as mulch and plant through it. Your plants need to be grounded into some soil. They can't... Compost just really dries out quickly. And so that's one way to do it. But if you've got really compacted soil, you really need to get in there. First off, what you need to realize is after you start working on your soil, you shouldn't be stepping on it anymore. You're compacting it. You're undoing what you've actually done. That's one of the reasons I recommend the widest bed to be 36 inches. My beds are actually 30 inches now. So you can reach totally to the inside without putting your foot on the bed. That is really a big deal for people, because if you can achieve that, that means in the coming years, because you're not stepping on the bed, your soil and what lives in your soil, the microbes that are, you know, taking care of your plant roots, are down there running around the soil, eating up the compost. They're the guys that deliver the nutrition to your roots. They're the most important players on our farm. We do everything we can to ensure them. And when you step on the soil and break their runways up, you know, compact them, that slows the whole process down. So having compost on hand to add to your soil every single year. It's not a one-shot deal. If your soil is in bad shape, I'd add a couple inches and then incorporate it. Turn the soil over. We love using a garden fork or a broad fork if you're a avid gardener or a farmer. And just incorporate that. It helps to retain moisture and it gets life back into your soil. We also use a dry organic-based fertilizer general purpose. We actually sell the same that I use here on my farm, which is a chicken litter base. The thing is, we don't put anything beyond general purpose unless a soil test tells us to.
Okay. You're not using bloom boosters or, you know, bloom specific.
No.
Okay.
No. We just use general. We focus all of my money on labor and all of our funds on making our soil better and better with each passing year. Because that's why, I mean, people find it hard to believe. So I've been farming here for 27 years. We virtually don't irrigate. We have irrigation installed on our farm. You can talk to every person that has worked for me for the last 10 years. We lay irrigation every time we build a bed, but we rarely have to and hook it up. We get rain here. I'm in southeastern Virginia. You know, we get 50 inches of rain a year, but because our soil is in such great shape, it holds water. Our roots, not only does it hold water, but our roots go deep, deep, deep looking for water that aren't relying on what's on the surface. And all, it's just a big old love story, you know, about taking care of your soil and compost, leaf mold. And I'm a fan of any kind of compost. As long as it's finished, that means done cooking, whether it's mushroom or whatever, llama poop, chicken poop, as long as it's composted, we'll use it pretty much. So beefing up your soil, using a dry organic fertilizer according to instructions. Don't go overdosing. And then how are you going to prevent the weeds? And then for a freestanding 3x10 bed, how are you going to keep the weeds from getting into the bed, growing up on it? So you really need to think about those things and make it easy. Simplify, simplify. That's the secret to doing the job each week.
And is it full? We're talking full light, 8 hours a day of light.
Full sun. The sheer nature of a cutting garden is you cut it and then that stimulates, you know, when you cut, people don't realize when you are cutting the flower that's ready to be cut, you're not even noticing the understory of buds. Those buds are what are going to jump into action the minute you cut the ready stem. And that's what you're going to cut next week are those flowers. And all the time there's these layers of different stages and they just keep coming on.
So let's talk about pinching, because I know for flower farming, pinching is so important. You were talking about the annuals and how important it is to cut and then the cut and come again. So once we get our plants planted, when should we start pinching? How often should we pinch?
Sure. So, you know, we're just such big believers in super healthy plants lead a disease-free, abundant life, right? That's why we're so big about starting from seed, right? First 2 weeks of life really does affect how the long haul of the plant goes. So pinching, planting, and pinching are both really stressful activities on a plant. We may not realize it. So we don't plant and pinch right away. And we don't pinch everything because we just don't have time. That's what it boils down to. So typically, the first cut of your flower can be your pinch. That's the confusing part for people. So whenever you have a branching annual, which is like lemon basil
or zinnia.
Zinnias,
yeah, let's take zinnia.
Yeah, all of those. Not necessarily sun. There are branching sunflowers, but the ones we grow are not. So you would not pinch those. So we typically plant and then most often allow our first harvest, cutting that central stem, be the actual what would have been the pinch. However, pinching comes in really handy when, for instance, you've started your seeds, the transplants are gorgeous. And one of the things about soil blocking is plants grow so much quicker because their roots get oxygen because they're not in a container. So, I mean, a zinnia is planted at 2 to 3 weeks. You know, celosia is 4 weeks. So let's just say it's 3 weeks and your zinnias are blooming gorgeous. The seedlings are just, it's the proudest moment of your life, but you haven't made your bed, bad girl, and it's going to rain for the next 3 weeks and you're stuck. So having pinching in your back pocket as an option allows you to buy more time to keep that transplant healthy while it's still not planted and it's either in a soil block or in a container or whatever. So we would pinch those plants because that takes away the top growth, you know, which allows more light and air and just makes them a healthier plant. So pinching is significant. You don't have to do it. It just makes branching earlier. My golden rule for pinching in a perfect world is to pinch 50% of every crop before you plant it. But it's just easier. Think about standing there at a table pinching versus crawling down a row on your hands and knees in the garden, pinching them, you know? So my rule is if I pinched you today, you would not get planted for 10 to 14 days because we want to know that you've recovered from that little stressful act and I see the little sprout starting to sprout. That says to me, I'm over it. I'm ready to move on because then I'm going to plant you. And that's another little stress. You don't want to do them all at the same time. And so that's how that really works. And in a perfect world, if I pinch 50% of a tray, that means that when I plant them, the pinched ones are going to branch earlier and the non-pinched ones are going to bloom earlier. So you get the best of both worlds. But you know what I tell people? Don't stress over it. Just do what needs to be done and go on. If you don't pinch, the first cut for the harvest is the pinch.
Right. Eventually, because that first harvest, like I think I made a mistake last year. I had some zinnias as companion plantings in, you know, my edible grow bags. And the first flower I was so excited about that I left it on the plant. And what I'm realizing is I should have taken that flower, enjoyed it indoors in order to get more going.
Yeah. And I hear so cutting is very traumatic for people, you know, having to just do it. But let me tell you what's even more traumatic is where you're supposed to make the cut. Back in the day when I used to do a once a month kind of free workshop here when I was at the farmer's market, you know, it was a way to get people to the farm and see what we're doing. And I loved nothing more than taking a group of 30 people out to my garden and say, all right, where do y'all, and it's, you know, a fresh crop of zinnias, no cut, hadn't been pinched. And I'll say, so where does everybody think I should make the cut on this flower? And there, and there's all these side shoots, right? And then there's this crowning glory, big, beautiful bloom at the very top. And everybody's like, oh, I would cut it up here so I could save all those side shoots. And, you know, all these, I mean, it just was so much fun. And when I reach over and cut it only about 8 or 10 inches from ground level, they sucked the air out of my city. I mean, it was really one of the most priceless things we did. I mean, it was like, oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
And so what that does is you're doing the pinch. If I just cut the top 8 inches, which is you probably would have done with that little topper, thinking that all those others are going to grow on. In fact, they never reach their full potential because they'll just be short stumped. They'll start blooming when they're 8, 10, 12 inches long. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for 20 to 30 inch long stems, and they will continue to produce more. And when you cut that way, it helps to keep your plant from toppling quite so much because they aren't so top heavy. And this actually works for herbs too. And so we reach down there, cut deep. We just strip off all that side stuff. And they literally, I've had people cry in my garden. I kid you not. I mean, they're like just so devastated over all of it. But it's like, call it tough love, whatever you want. The bottom line is I want more strong, straight stems with big, honking flowers on it. And this is how you do it.
Because what you know is that by making that one brutal cut, in 2 weeks, you're going to have four flowers where that one flower was because the plant resets almost.
Exactly. So when you make that cut, you're actually cutting above 2 to 4 side shoots that are going to quickly jump out. They're going to grow stronger. They're going to straighten up because there's not this big thing in the middle making them grow crooked. And it's pretty phenomenal. And I will tell you, it's like we needed to have a support group for people until they lived it. When they cut like they were going to cut, then they realized they never needed to go bigger than a 3x10 garden because it's absolutely fascinating how many flowers they produce when you just keep cutting on them and cut them hard.
I had the same exact experience the first time I pruned houseplants. I was beside myself. And then when you see with your own eyes the lateral growth that comes in, you're like, why did I wait this long?
Exactly.
How many leaves when you're cutting back? Is there a rule of thumb, like only cut 2/3 of the plant or make sure that you leave 6 leaves on the established plant in the ground? Or is there any rule of thumb there?
I don't find that with annuals. I mean, you want to leave. So we cut typically above a lower 2 to 4 side shoots, which have leaves on them. But, you know, you don't want to cut down and just leave a stump, right? And so when we cut the future stems, you know, all those side shoots, we just follow that stem all the way down to where it meets the central stem. And that's where we make the cut, because where you cut is where more comes from, right? And that's, you want them to come from the base of the plant, kind of, to get the best growth.
Amazing. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right house plants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
Listen, there isn't any one way to be a Black girl. We aren't a monolith, and sometimes we can really use a community to help take on life together. What is going on, beautiful people? I'm Tyra the Creative, and I host the Affirmations for Black Girls podcast, a resource that I truly wish I had when I was growing up. I created the Affirmations for Black Girls community to foster a safe space for women who may find themselves feeling alone going through life's daily struggles. A space where we can be more open for the sake of a healthier future. And we like to keep it real, raw, and regular over here, okay? Life likes to hand us all kinds of lemons and limes. And through honest discussions, AFBG guides listeners through topics like relationships, faith, career, self-love, and personal development with a healing affirmation attached to every episode. By taking a moment to slow down, we encourage listeners to reflect on their emotions and personal experiences in order to move forward with a little extra understanding. And through all the laughs and all the tears, AFBG is here for you, girl. So here's a quick affirmation for y'all. Allowing myself to be open to new things is a form of self-care. Let's say it one more time together. Allowing myself to be open to new things is a form of self-care. Again, y'all, this is the Affirmations for Black Girls podcast. Check us out every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
What about harvesting tips? What are the biggest mistakes you see people make when they've got their beautiful blooms and they don't harvest correctly? Like, what are some good tips for long base life and happy plants?
Sure. So a couple of things. One is they wait too long. They're too busy gazing at it.
Guilty. I'm guilty.
And the book literally shows and describes stage to harvest so that there's really no question about it. Because What we don't realize is leaving them out in the garden, not only are they getting wind whipped and cooked by the sun, but bugs walk around and literally poop and pee on the blooms. That's what spots are. You know, they really damage it. And then you just kick yourself. Then you bring it in and all you can see are the spots. You no longer have that glorious bloom that you actually did. So waiting too long is really a problem. And then not cutting often enough. We highly recommend cutting twice a week. That's for the top quality and top production. When you don't leave a bloom that's ready to be harvested out in the garden for additional days, waiting for your once a week harvest day, it just ups the game, the quality of the bloom and your production. So we're Monday, Thursday harvesters around here. I mean, in a small 3x10, what's it going to take? 5 minutes? Just make it part of your day. If you're a Saturday morning gardener, make it your Saturday morning and hump day, Saturday and Wednesday. It's like make a date with your garden and literally stick to it and then cut where it needs to be cut, bone up on where that is so your plant will continue to produce. And then always, you know, succession, succession, succession. Plant, that's the secret to being a great gardener and a great farmer. It spreads out the seed starting, it spreads out the work, it spreads out the harvest, and it makes your choices endless in what to grow.
Does it make sense to succession plant if you're like me or in a gardening zone like 6 and lower, basically, like when
sure.
It does make sense?
Yes, because you might not be, because you're thinking of only a warm season stuff, you know, to incorporate. I mean, I understand. I mean, it's the way that you stretch your season. And, you know, I don't know if I've even said this, you know, I have no Hooper greenhouses here. I am 100% an outdoor farmer gardener, and I start seeds in this building that I'm sitting in. So to learn when the book really walks you through when to learn when you plant cool season and warm season in your garden. And when you get those pieces of information, you rule the world. Because what people don't understand is there are a lot of cool season hardy annuals that survive winter in your zone 6. Meaning they should be planted in the fall as little plants, which you have to start from seed because you'll never find them for sale. And they winter over laying down killer roots so they bloom even earlier in the spring. And it's the beginning of a whole new season of gardening. I mean, that is the part. And what we're experiencing this year, I mean, I'm at Nula. The first book I wrote was called Cool Flowers, about this whole family, right? And it took years for me to preach about that before people believed me. I mean, nobody, and I didn't make this up. Our grandmas did this, y'all. I just figured out how to bring it into our mix and make the most of it. This particular year for here in the Mid-Atlantic area of the United States in Virginia, we are having this hot, cold, back and forth torture for many people, but it is not torture for me because guess what? We have warm and cool season planted, and every weather event that comes along, it's good for one or the other. So you're covered. I mean, you learn that it doesn't really matter what the weather does. You prepare for the worst and get the best, you hope. I mean, I have people in zone 3 that are embracing 3-season cutting garden. So
I love
much
it.
Colder than you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's funny you say that because 2 years ago, I planted some snapdragon seeds in an embarrassingly small container. I didn't know what I was doing. They didn't sprout, but I had a transplant in the middle that I bought at the garden center. And then I did a circle of seeds around it. They didn't do anything. This year, I have done nothing to this container. I forgot about it on my patio. I have like 6 snapdragon plants popping up.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they're totally hardy. And I was like, whoa, who knew?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's just so many families of flowers. I mean, what is the most coveted flower that I find people pine away to grow that they can't grow is Bells of Ireland. What is it about the mesmerizing of that flower? Is it the name? Is it the look? Is it the bells? Yeah. You know what the secret is? They really prefer to be direct seeded, and we direct sow them in the fall. I mean, they're winter hardy, I think. Probably not for you. Zone 7, probably. It's in the book. I have to look up the temperature, but it's finding out, is it a cool season or is it a warm season? Okay. Segregate. When do I plant cool? All right. Let me see. Does it survive winter for me? Oh, I would plant it in the fall because it does survive winter. And why do you do that? Because they get established. They go dormant during winter and they hit the ground running at the first signs of spring where you would normally just be planting it, and it's ready to hit the ground running.
Oh my God. I could talk to you for two more hours, but I have two more questions for you. Number one, I was going to ask you this offline, but why don't I just ask you this now? So if people grow back garden like me, they might be able to benefit from this question. So specifically, I'm going to ask you for advice for my specific scenario. So zone six, didn't start seeds. It's planting time. It's my frost date right now. I have large grow bags, like big grow bags that I grew tomatoes in.
The secret to success, right?
Yeah, that I grew tomatoes in last year. I'm moving my tomatoes to raised beds, but I want to play around with my grow bags now. My vision is to have two large grow bags exploding with cut flowers but I have very limited space. I have two grow bags. So I'm going to go to the garden center and buy the transplants, but how many can I get? And also, I love cosmos. If we can throw some cosmos in there.
Sure. And you know, Maria, I would really encourage you. You can definitely direct sow seeds, especially in a very focused area like you have, grow bags. So you're controlling that. Once it gets warm enough to direct sow the very same seeds, let's put cosmos in. Sunflowers, zinnias, Miss Burns, lemon basil, and cosmos, and put them in there. What you have to be attentive to is, does the seed get covered with soil or not? Should tell you that right on the seed packet. Ours do. Hopefully, all's do. And to water them every day till they sprout. And then you're on your own. That way, you know you're going to actually get tons of blooms. I'm just thinking, when I was just at the garden center, I don't think I saw anything that would qualify for a cut flower. Yet, anyway, I mean, maybe it was just too early, right?
Do I overplant? Like, how many sunflower seeds do I put in one grow bag? I mean, sunflowers have huge root balls. That's where I'm like, can I put more?
Oh, but that's all right. As long as you water them enough, they'll be fine. I mean, we plant in a 30-inch wide bed, we plant five rows of sunflowers. If that gets, I mean, they're this far apart. The stems are with those big monster.
This is like two to three inches. So just in my one grow bag, I'm just going to plant, because I have a bunch of sunflower seed packs. I'm just going to go, and the ones that you recommend, the pro cut ones, I'll just do eight seeds in my thing and see what sprouts.
Because you know what you can do is plant eight seeds every 2 to 3 weeks. So you have constant sun. As soon as you cut them, you'll have more coming on. And I wouldn't even pull those sunflower roots out. I would just cut them. Make the cut or cut right at ground level and plug other stuff in around it. And I mean, I could get a little crazy doing something like that. You know what I mean? Tucking stuff in and finding ways. But if you can find zinnias at the garden center, you know that, but how tall do they get? So often they only get 14 to 20 inches tall. And that's just not usual. You'd have to cut the whole plant to make a stem. You know, that just wouldn't work very, very well. And that's why I just want to encourage people. Seeds are not nearly as tiny as they are. They're the scariest thing on the planet for most people, for reals. But in a container, in a small bed, I mean, we have seed collections for 3x10 beds. And it says right in there, you can definitely direct sow. All of these are very doable. If you wait till it's warm enough and you water them and you hold the weed pressure back, meaning cultivating so that, because the weeds definitely grow faster.
No weeds in my containers.
Exactly. So I'm saying, why don't you just plant some seeds in those bags? And get some real cut flowers, and you will be hook, line, and sinker.
Can I compromise with you and get a few starts so I have a little bit of a head start and then do seeds right next to it?
Sure. I just don't even know. So I guess I would look at the garden center. Celosia is another really popular, great cut flower that you will see down at the garden center. But again, if you read the labels, most of them only get 10 or 12 inches tall.
I know. Yeah. I tried growing Celosia once and it was like 6 inches. I was like, what is this?
Oh yeah. Ours grow like 48 inches tall.
Oh my God.
Giant marigolds. Marigolds are another. I mean, our marigolds are, 36 inches tall and huge bombs. They're just fascinating.
I'm going to go through my seeds that I have. I have some sunflowers. I have zinnias. I'm going to go to the garden center and see what other seeds are. And then I'm going to look and see if I could find a couple of starts. Now, what about cosmos starts? Could I start with some cosmos starts and then
Sure. Most Cosmos are tall. I mean, I'm sure, I guess I haven't ever looked at a nursery for Cosmos, but I'm sure that, you know, yes. And here's the secret about Cosmos. Cosmos aren't the longest lasting cut flower, but they're fabulous. They're like sweet peas. They're fabulous while you have them. They really perform best at the end of summer as the day length gets shorter. So we grow them. We plant them four times throughout the year as succession planting, but our biggest planting is always in midsummer.
When you're direct planting the seeds is in the middle of the summer?
No, we start seeds inside and plant a three-week-old transplant out in the garden. You would just have to count back your weeks. That's why you have to find out when is your optimal, you know, when's your first expected frost? How many days, you know, does a Cosmo need? 120 days. All right, so when can I plant them last? But the Cosmos here in the fall, we grow 14 different varieties or colors and variety mixes of that. Oh my gosh.
It's also my dream aesthetic. Like on my balcony garden, I put the Cosmos around my dinner table and yes. I just see my husband surrounded by Cosmos blowing in yeah. the evening. Like it's just my purest delight, but that's not maybe I just grow the Cosmos to enjoy my balcony and not as the cut flower, but. And then if now poppy and Cosmos are two very kind of similar delicate flowers, what do you find is easier to grow?
Well, poppies are cool season hardy annuals, and those are winter hardy in your zone. You should direct sow those in the fall. They're called Iceland poppies for a reason. You know, I mean, they love it really cold and they're pretty hardy. I mean, we cut them before they even open, they just as they're cracking, just like Cosmos. And they're big in demand because they're the first flower to bloom on our farm, usually in late March, early April.
They're a dream too. And they're frankly, I think the pods are even more beautiful in a vase than yes. the flower. Like I think those pods are incredible.
These are poppy pods yeah. right here behind me. Those are giant poppy pods. Yeah. Yeah.
You are a dream. I hope we can be friends. This has been so fun talking to you. I feel like I'm looking into my future once we still rent, even though I'm in the woods, but I'm actually hoping to move to Virginia, hopefully soon. So now I'm like, now I could really just follow in your
Yeah, it's a beautiful state.
But okay, your book is incredible. Anyone interested in learning about cut flowers, you have the cut flower profiles of every single flower. You literally explain it. I mean, I was reading your book. I already said this, but the visual guide that you help is incredible. Please tell us about your book and also about all these courses you're selling, about your website. Like, where can we all come learn from you? I will also take what I've learned from you and experiment and make sure we stay in touch on Instagram as well. But where can everyone find you?
Sure. So home base is our website, thegardenersworkshop.com. And it's pretty deep and wide. We have a fully stocked online garden shop, which is where you'll find my books. And so, yeah, thank you for the compliments on my book. It was a real labor of love. It's the book I wanted when somebody says, I want to learn how to grow a cut flower. And I can say, here you go. Here's the book.
I will gift that for that exact reason.
And so you'll find our book there. And whenever you purchase any of my books from us, they come with additional resources. And this book comes with a bonus PDF of the book, The Flowers That Didn't Make the Book. And that's just because there wasn't room for them. And of course, I sign them. So you'll find the book there. But also, kind of our niche is that we only sell the tools, seeds, and supplies that I literally use. It's all the varieties of the seeds that we offer on our website are the same seeds that I'm starting and planting on my farm. We don't grow seed typically, but we package them with my instructions, with all the proper spacing as cut flowers, just all that kind of information. I used to travel and do about 80 to 100 lectures a year all across the country, from flower farmers to master gardeners to big garden club organizations. And when online courses kind of came out in 2016 and 17, I saw it as an excellent opportunity to be able to provide the information to people in video, hearing it instead of reading it, just reading it, to be able to give it to them in a way that they can watch it over and over, which we know that's the best way to learn, because as you learn, then you hear more things you didn't hear the first time you listened.
100%.
Oh my gosh. And we provide continued support with our big schools. We have private communities where people, if you don't find the answer to your question in our course content, which is deep and wide, there are thousands of frequently asked questions and they're all searchable. Then you can go to your community and start asking questions. And your instructors are tagged for our big schools. And it's really my passion because we need more professional cut flower growers, keyword being professional. And that means in the quality that you're producing and the way that you reach out to customers. You know, we're currently spending about $8 billion a year in the United States alone purchasing cut flowers. $8 billion, and 80% of that's imported from distant lands like South America.
Bring it home. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way it used to be until about 40 years ago. It got, and that's a long story in itself, but we're working at it. And it is a great second income for lots of people, but I have plenty of full-time flower farming friends that this is their family livelihood, but farming is work. And it can be hard as any business is, but I will tell you, it's the most satisfying thing that I've ever done. And I totally love it. And our instructors are people like me, people that have been doing it for years. They have a teacher's heart. Anyway, you can find it all at thegardenersworkshop.com. And I am very active on social media. And I have a club, which is a private community that I interact with and includes content every month. And that's just another level of learning from me and just love it all.
Oh my God. I've just fallen in love with you in this conversation even more than when I read your book.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this was such a pleasure. And maybe you will be kind enough to come back on in the future for maybe an episode on how to take your hobby farm, you know, into a professional farm, because this was definitely geared for beginners. But I'm like, give me a couple of years, Lisa. I need to go buy some property and, you know, and then I'll come back and do that. So maybe we could have you on again in the future.
Would love to.
All right, plant friends, are you so stoked to grow cut flowers? Literally the minute I stopped recording with Lisa, I ran outside. I have my zinnia transplants waiting for me and I pinched 50% of them, just like she told me. I'm so excited. I'm so stoked after this interview to try cut flower gardening in grow bags. We'll see. It's going to be a total experiment. My grow bags are big. My passion is strong. My determination is there. We'll see what takes off. You can follow me on Instagram to see my cut flower gardening successes and failures. I'm at Growing Joy with Maria on Instagram. And then go follow Lisa. She's amazing. So her book is The Cut Flower Handbook. I highly recommend it if you're interested in growing cut flowers. The book just dives in so deeply into the specifics that we talked about. There's a lot of visual aids for visual learners like myself. It's available anywhere books are sold. It's called The Cut Flower Handbook. And then you can also visit her website at thegardenersworkshop.com or follow her on Instagram. I know I will be. I'm really just the most excited. I'm the most excited. I hope you follow me on Instagram to see my cut flower gardening journey. I hope you write me about your cut flower gardening journey. Send me DMs or email me at maria@growingjoywithmaria.com. And I really hope this episode helps you grow some flowers. And whether you're growing flowers or whether you're growing herbs or whether you're growing houseplants, I hope you keep growing joy this week. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Thank you.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.